Greetings from Podcastville. The Church of What's Happened Now is brought to you by Manscaped, precision tools for the family jewels. Listen, this Thanksgiving, if you want her to say gobble, gobble, you got to trim it up down there a little bit. You can't go down there looking like Eddie Munster's head do. Don't let bad hair gene get it. Hygiene. Don't let bad hygiene get between you and the stuffing. You know what I'm saying? Carve up that love stick with Manscaped. They created the only tool you need to shave the pole of death and shave your balls. It's called a lawnmower 2.0 for a reason. And right now, the Church family gets 20% off your first order. Listen to what I'm saying to you. 20% off your first order to keep your fucking love stick tip-top magoo. You understand me? Shave the hair. You know, have you looked down there lately? It's a nightmare. I don't care how old you are. It's a nightmare. We don't look as men. We go out there like the world knows or something. The world don't know your dick. You understand me? Go to manscaped.com right now. Shave that love stick. Shave around the nut area and see how much girls will love you even more when they got that nut right in your mouth. And they're looking at you like this nut tastes like a chocolate-covered strawberry. You understand me? But the Church family gets 20% off your first order when you use Church at manscaped.com. And if you order the perfect package, which I'll tell you at the end of the show, they'll throw in a free travel bag just when you use the code CHURCH. All right? That's manscaped.com. Use promo code CHURCH, C-H-U-R-C-H, to get 20% off your first order. Clean that motherfucking love stick area. Number two, the Church is brought to you by Hello Tushy. You're like, Joey, what's Hello Tushy? Hello Tushy is a portable bidet that takes you 10 minutes to install yourself on your toilet. And it basically changes your whole life. You don't understand what it's like to sit there. No more toilet paper, no more cutting down trees, no more little Arab-looking little Mexicans running down the jungle, cutting trees and stuff. No more of that. We eliminate that whole process. What do you want to do, wipe with toilet? You wipe your butt with toilet paper, but you still leave the microbes and the germs on there, which cause a variety of different things like hemorrhoids, yeast infections, UTI, not to mention the classic itchy asshole and skid marks, which at 56, I still get from time to time. I should be shot and hung. But listen, bidets are common all over the world. Bidet saves you money on toilet paper. Tushy, the bidet, sprays your little muffler with fresh water. It's not toilet water. Tushy connects to the water supply behind your toilet spray. You understand me? It's the same water you brush your teeth with. Do me a favor. They start at $79. It's the most amazing unconditional gift you could give anybody in your life. And listen, everybody needs one. Take a look at your mother next time you go over there for Thanksgiving. Look at her ass, what it looks like with all those dimples and shit. If anybody needs a bidet, it's your mom. Start with your mom. Give her the gift of love. Wash your ass, mom. Go to HelloTushy.com right now and press in Church, C-H-U-R-C-H, and get 10% off your order. Tushy starts at $79. Again, HelloTushy.com/Church and get 10% off your first order. Mule, kick this mule, Lee. You know what I'm saying? Why are we playing games? We're kicking off with a tremendous little A-I-O-U. What? Oh, my goodness. It's a day before Thanksgiving. You're flying, you're drying, you're smoking, you're toking. This is it, baby. Uncle Joey's here with you. Old school, the flying Jew. Who needs a guest the day before Thanksgiving? Oh, yeah. Suck it. Lick it, flick it, motherfuckers. We're coming after you. We're coming. Get up. Let everybody know what's going on. Let them know you're making a comeback, bitch. You're back. Manscaped, the Tushy. Get ready to suck. You know what I'm saying? Thanksgiving. Who do you think you're dealing with? Joey Bananas, Uncle Joey here. Just giving you a little pep talk before the holidays. That's it, it's over. Thanksgiving's here. You were sitting there scratching your head. Halloween, da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm going to be the wolf man, the gay wolf man this year. That shit went and passed. It's Thanksgiving. Tomorrow you'll be sitting there with a bunch of people looking at them. Some of you go to those hobo Thanksgivings when you don't know nobody. And you get there, nobody's got teeth. There's one guy that's half nude. And he's offering you stuff and you need that in your life. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to have a little shing-ding tomorrow. Lee's coming over. Kate Quigley's coming over. The Essentials. Family, what it's all about on Thanksgiving. Sunday night, I was at the Comedy Store. I got into a conversation that was really funny. It was funny at first, but then I went home and I thought about what had transpired and what it said, and I felt sad. I felt so sad. I called Dean Delray at 1 a.m.
Really?
And we talked for about an hour because it was a conversation about the movie The Joker.
Okay.
And it was Eddie Ift, a couple guys in the back. And Eddie Ift was saying how he didn't enjoy the film because it had some type of, it let the public know that it's okay to shoot people or something. And then Alonzo Bowden was sitting there, who, you know, guy was like, he fixed airplanes for a living. He worked for Boeing. And he made an interesting point when he was on stage. He goes, I enjoyed the movie, but it also let me know how that's every comic you know. That could happen to every comic you know. Because of the highs and the lows. And I went on stage and, you know, I got off and I talked to Whitney and I talked to this guy and you say hello to the bartender. You really forget. And as I was driving up Laurel Canyon, a fact came into my mind that not a lot of people know, but I'll tell you. From 1995 to 2000, I was pretty much homeless, guys. It was every day was a different story. It's where I ended up. When I left Boulder, June of 95, I left with a car filled with stuff, the essentials, you know, and I packed up some stuff in storage, and I thought I was going to come back, but in my heart, I knew I wasn't coming back. There was no way to lie to nobody.
You were going to Seattle.
I was going to Seattle, but I was going to go do this comedy thing. I was going to go see what it was really about. I had had a touch of the road already. I knew what the road was about. I had featured at a club already, but not really. It was like a C club. I was going to the Comedy Underground, you know, a well-known club, and I didn't know anybody or whatever. And I went up there, and I lived with the stripper, you know, my dear friend. And, you know, my name wasn't on the lease. She'd throw me out every 2 months. I'd end up at Josh Wolf's house or somebody's house. And then we lived in a trailer. It was her trailer. And then I came down here, and we broke up like in 97. And pretty much from 97 and a half to 2000, I was pretty much homeless. Like, that would make somebody go, you know what, how much do I really love comedy?
I don't think I would do it. I think
it's time to get a job and really assess my life and... I just had no other choices. I had no other options. I had tried everything already.
Did any part of you think about going back to selling drugs? Or?
Oh, yeah. The plan was the failure and to go back to New Jersey and just sling and sling until I died. Whatever that means.
How far, like what did failure mean to you if being homeless wasn't there yet?
Failure was spinning my wheels. Which I felt deep down inside I wasn't. And actually, my instincts were correct. Spinning my wheels, at least I was getting spots at the store. I would go to the store at 9:05 and take a shower some days. And I would go about my day, and then I'd go back in there about 7:15, 7:15, 6:30, before the bartenders got there. And I'd go in the main room and take another shower. And I'd be ready for the night, you know, and... just thinking about all those things got me so depressed. I called Dean up because as of 2 or 3 years ago, you know, when Dean started on the podcast, Dean would go to New York and would be basically homeless. He would start every day at 12 and go to a coffee shop and write jokes and then hit all these open mics and hit some paid gigs to put some change in his pocket. And then he would walk around and go on that hotel app.
Hotel Tonight, yeah.
Hotel Tonight, and he'd wait till 10 o'clock to get a room. And I got to be honest with you, and you guys know me, there was a lot of nights that I sat there going, should I just send him $300? Like, why is he doing this? And right before I was about to pick up the phone to send him the money, it dawned on me that this is what you have to do. This is the sacrifice. This proves to you that what you're doing, this makes you committed into what you're doing, you know. I had tons of highs and lows when I got here. A couple of them were suicidal as fuck. that most people would ice themselves or most people would quit. You know, one came up in particular with Dean where, you know, when you start auditioning, you get lucky at first. You know, knowledge is not power sometimes. Going in there not knowing what's going on is way better sometimes. Sometimes you hit the jackpot not even knowing. And then when you get smart, you don't book dicks.
Right.
For years. Once you know what you're doing, you won't book nothing. And you go, wait a second, maybe I should go back to what I was doing. So you don't really know. But for a year, I had a manager that was a real manager. His job was to get you out every day and get you on a TV show. And Lee, he went at it with all his heart on a daily basis. This guy would fight. He was a fighter. Jewish guy, one of those desert Jews, short, tanned, you know, yarmulke wearing. But man, when he went to work in the morning, he went to work. There was nights he would call me at 12:30 at night with an audition. You know, like I'd be like, who's texting me? Like, who's paging me? And it would be him. And I'd go like, what's going on? He's like, I just emailed you a script. Go home, read it. You got to be in there by 10 o'clock tomorrow. Like that type of stuff. So for a year, I took a beating, Lee. Just going to auditions, walking out and saying, I got this role. And then I wouldn't even hear back from them.
Right.
You know, after they would like be like, thank you for coming in. It was so nice meeting you. We're going to come to the store and watch you one night. I would just go in there to eat a bag of dicks pretty much. And this went on from 98 to about 2001. Think of going into things, big things. Like I was going to, I remember going into for Men in Black.
Damn.
Like I remember going in for the first one and going like Rhona Kress. That's her cast. That's the casting agent. Rhona Kress was huge then. Like if you got in to see Rhona Kress, people would go like, who do you have as representation? There was three or four people that you could not get in with in those days. Like the lady who cast Spider-Man too. She cast Pretty Women and a bunch of other things.
Damn.
She wouldn't see you. I don't even know how I got in there. The guy that casts, he casts the Walter Hill movies and all of Blade and all those movies. Ruben, I forget what his name is, black dude, gentleman of a dude. That's when you used to have to pre-read, Lee.
What does that mean?
You used to have to go and read for an assistant. And if the assistant thought you were good enough, then you'd go home and get a call and go back the next day and read for the casting director.
Jesus.
And then if he liked you, he called you back again. This is when budgets, when they were allowing budgets to cast people. Like real now, if you know anything about casting, they cast right from the sheet. Like they just go down the sheet and call. They just put offers out. Like I had an audition when I first busted up my leg, and I was like, I don't know if I should go or not. And I called them, and I go, listen, I'm not going to make it because of my leg. Can I put it on tape? The audition was at 4. At 4:45, they called me back. I'm like, oh, no, they already made an offer to somebody. So they were going to make me drive all the way to Wilshire and read, even though they had made an offer to somebody.
Right.
That's the type of world we live in today. Back then, they wouldn't lie to you, like, and that Walter Hill audition, it was a movie with Ving Rhames and Ruben, and it was Ving Rhames and the guy who went to jail for taxes for Blade.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It was him, and I'll never forget that. I swear to God, I must have gone in 7 times. Damn. To read for that, for the Travolta movie, 7 or 8 times.
Same lines, or they'd give you different lines?
Same lines, sometimes they expand the script. Sometimes they give you all your scenes from the movie, so they make sure you can read all the scenes from the movie and you can handle it. It was just buck wild. You know, I remember reading for The Sopranos and the paper shaking. But my point is that it's tough not to snap. It's tough not to snap as a comic. And that night, I didn't sleep much that night. And because that's how much it affected me. Like what I went through to get here, like the mud that I went through to get here. You know, I used to be really hot this time of the year. Right now is my time of the year. Like commercials, oh, I would burn them right now because this is so Super Bowl time. And it's also, we have to shoot this pilot time. And I'll never forget, like every year during the holidays, I couldn't enjoy the holidays. They ruined my holidays. Better yet, I let them ruin my holidays because of my weak mind. You know, when I walk into an audition now and I do an audition, I walk out and I get in my car and it's done. It's done, Lee. It's done. And people look at me and go, how do you do that? It's 20 years.
Right.
There's no use of taking this home with me. But there was a time when you're slipping on somebody's couch that you need this. This is not a joke. You need this. You need this worse than ever. And there was one particular time that I came all the way home because when I read the script, I go, I can't see anybody doing this. It was a show for Fox or NBC. It was NBC, you know, the crazy roommate, the straight two white guys. I forget who the lead was. But I came all the way off the road, had to sleep on a couch. Like, I think Ralphie was out of town. He took the keys so nobody could go in there, so that killed me. So I had to sleep on a couch. I didn't have a car. My apartment got towed then. That's when my apartment got towed.
So I had to
sleep on this guy's couch. And from December, like, 6th, the torture started. Like, December 6th started. Come on, we want to read Joey Diaz. Went down there, read, came back. 2 days later, we want to read you again. Went down there, read again. They want to read you again. They read with four guys. So I had to read with the four guys they were looking at and see how we looked together in the room. Went back down there, read with each guy individually. Then the weekend hit, went back down there a week later and read new lines and revisions. And then went down there, they made me go to stage, and we had to do the scene on stage.
Whoa.
Okay, with the paper in your hand, like a little play for a scene. They taped that. That went on until December 19th.
So 2 weeks of that? Oh, my God.
So for 2 weeks, my whole life was embroidered in that. Yeah, there were other auditions and other stuff. And then, boom, the holidays hit. I didn't hear nothing. I mean, I was pissed, Lee. On December 19th, I was furious.
Just staring at your phone?
I was staring. I would sleep with the pager. I needed this job. This wasn't a job. I needed this, whatever the pilot paid, 15 grand, and then whatever the episodes were after that. I could care less what they were. This was, in my world, the end of my dilemma. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right, like, yeah.
I saw it as a means to an end. So when you see things as a means to an end, they hurt more. They hurt a lot more. And I never forget that I had to wait it out from the, like, 19th to, like, the 4th or 5th of January. And that first morning, I called him, and I go, man, tell me what's going on. He goes, this has been the worst holiday season because they called me on the 24th. And I go, what'd they tell you? And he goes, they went with a black guy. So 2 weeks of driving to Orange County. I got nothing against black guys. I got nothing against black people, but it takes your heart and it just rings it. It just rings it, you know. And you're getting 10 of those and 10 of those at a shot. Like, I still remember Steve Renazzisi coming up to me, like, with tears in his eyes. When them, Bobby Lee, all those guys, we all went through a patch where you really start to test your sanity. You try to, not test it, but you start to question it. Like, what am I doing? What am I doing? And then you go home, pick up the pieces, and there you are the next day. And, you know, you hurt. When you hear you didn't get the role, you hurt. And then you know what the crazy thing is? That all that pain that you went through and all that anguish, the show gets made, it gets picked up. You curse it. You're cursing it the whole time. Fuck you, I hope you fail. And sure enough, there's 6 episodes and the show gets canceled.
Right.
And you feel so much better now. You're like, you know, like, so I've learned over the years that the roles I didn't get, like, they didn't matter. Like, once, you know, they didn't really matter once they were done.
But it's easier looking at it 20 years later, because, like, I've thought about this, like, about the Joker. I mean, obviously, we're in comedy and stand-up and acting, but something that I've come to realize as I've gotten older, like, I used to look at, like, remember when Martin Lawrence ran down the street crazy? I was like, oh, wow, he's crazy. He had a, the older I get, I'm like, I can see how just you could be having like a bad couple weeks and one guy like cuts you off on the freeway and you just lose. Like, I could see that happening a lot more clearly now. Like, when people, I remember applying to jobs and it's the same thing. You don't hear back from them. They have you come interview and you drive all the way down there and the interview takes 3 minutes or the person doesn't show up for an hour. It's, that's like, I used to think crazy people were just crazy, and some of them are, but I think there's just some things that you could just snap. I think it's easier than it seems.
I could lie to you people and tell you that I know there were about 3 times I was going to snap. And I know about times that I did snap because of a situation. And I went off on somebody else about something else because of that initial situation, which a lot of us do. We're so angry that we got towed. Our brother calls us and says, are you coming home for Thanksgiving? And you're like, oh, the hell?
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Like, oh, fuck it. And you're like, no, you got a beef because you went out of line. You were out of line. I could see myself. You know, I haven't watched The Joker yet. I am going to watch it. I just didn't want to go to the movies and stuff. And I didn't have time that week and the whole thing. And I am going to watch when it comes on a plane or something, when I could watch a movie. And that was, it was just, it's really hard to swallow what minefields I walked through to get here. Like, that night it made me realize. And again, I go back to a conversation that I've discussed on the podcast before. You know, my only conversation ever with Slash was at the Riviera. And he was like, are you happy in your life now? And I'm like, I'm happy. You know, and he goes, are you broke? And I'm real broke. And he goes, this is going to be the best time of your life. Because when you get the big checks, you're going to look at this time and you're going to understand why you got those checks. When you start, you know, selling out like a club or something like that, and you don't have to doubt yourself. A lot of people start doubting themselves. They really do. They try to, what's that word? Not camouflage. They try to, you know, like bombard their own success. They stand in their own way.
Oh, self-sabotage?
They self-sabotage themselves because they don't think they should be, they deserve what they're doing. But that night really made me go, oh, okay. Like that. Like, I really lost sleep over it. I couldn't wait to do the podcast to talk about this. And like I said, I had to call Dean. And Dean was like, I don't think people know that Dean did 3 years. He did, I think he said, 900 gigs on a motorcycle. He goes, I drove to San Diego. And he goes, I drove as far as Portland, Oregon on a motorcycle to do a spot. And he goes, I could tell you right now, I wouldn't do it again. Like, he goes, I don't know what I was thinking at the time. But that's the process. You know, that's the, I don't, like, dog, there were plenty of times when I went home and said, this is it. I'm not doing this.
Well, I mean, you and Dean have some, and I, to this, a small extent, me, because I started at 29, which is old, but not super old. But Dean started at 50. I can't imagine being 50 in an open mic with 21-year-olds. He was 46. Oh, 46. And you were 30-something?
I think I was 28. 1991. Okay. So I was, 1993 would make me 30. So 1991, I was 28. First time I got on stage, I was almost 28 and a half years of age.
It's, I can't imagine starting 46.
I had had life experiences. I didn't have the heart to talk about them on stage. I avoided them like a plague. I didn't start talking about prison until the podcast.
Really?
Or maybe Joe Rogan's podcast. Yeah.
Fuck.
I wouldn't talk about it at a comedy show at all. It's got nothing to do with what's the price of eggs. How wrong was I? It's got everything to do with the price of eggs. But it's really real what Alonzo said that night. How there's so many highs. And there's so many lows. I mean, you could be opening up for Tom Segura on Saturday night and come home on a plane, on a private plane. Or, and then the following Friday, you're getting in a car and driving to San Jose for feature money. and driving back Sunday night, which is 6 hours. And you're in the car going, last week I was in a private plane sipping mimosas with Tom Segura. And this week I'm driving to San Jose in my car, which Bailey's not going to make it. Like, I've gotten in cars that I knew wasn't going to make it. Like, did you ever do that? Like, if it makes it, it's going to be a miracle. If not, the feature act is behind me, or the MC, and he'll pick me up. I'll just abandon ship on the road.
Jesus. I had a shitty car, but I didn't take long trips like that.
Oh, yeah. You know, this is part of you change the oil, you change that oil filter, and you pray for the best. You put that thing in the radiator so it won't blow. In the old school cars, you would put these little plugs, aluminum plugs. And like that, your thing wouldn't leak. And it's just the price you pay. I sit here now and I go, you know, I did things that were completely out of my realm that I would not even consider doing. But I have a hard time going to 7-Eleven at 11 o'clock to get a kombucha juice. Like, seriously, like, if I'm at home, I'm like, 11 o'clock, that's scary out there. maybe I'll go to the one by the open mic over there, like that one, and I'll go in there, and I'm like, nah, because I don't want to see those people. And if you go to the one over here, you got homeless Johnny, you got the chick with no legs, the one that we put the light beams in her eyeballs that night, she was giving us the finger. You know, I'm scared to death.
Yeah.
I'm scared to death. You know, there was a time when I lived to do comedy because they would feed me. Like, I was in great shape. Oh, you were thin and bolder. Yeah. Because I was really, what was that diet you're on?
Oh, which one? The keto?
No, the other one. The
low carb?
No, the other one. The occasional starvation.
Oh, intermittent fasting?
Yeah, I was intermittent fasting in 95. I was intermittent fasting from 95 till I met Carol the stripper. You know, until she started feeding me, you know, turkey burgers and stuff like that. My life was all about intermittent fasting. I would look at a piece, I would eat a sandwich, wrap up the wrapper and look at a wrapper and go, I don't want them to see one of these again, but we'll figure it out. You know, jumping over a counter for a pack of cigarettes at Denver International Airport and going into the bathroom and smoking them because you don't have any money for cigarettes. I mean, I got 1,000 of these stories. You know, taking that bus. I lived on a Greyhound bus on the East Coast. Lived up and down. Buffalo, Syracuse, you know, Rochester, Toronto, back to South Carolina, Myrtle Beach, back to New York, you know, Philadelphia, D.C. It was just crazy. Standing on a bus stop for 3 hours from 3:30 in the morning to 7 till your bus comes with $3 in your pocket.
See, there's different levels to me. Like, that to me sounds like kind of exciting. I mean, obviously, for years at a time, I could see how it would not be cool. To me, now that sounds kind of exciting. But the whole, like, I guess it just doesn't make sense in my head. I'm like, to not have money to eat is pretty fucking
intense. But you're going to pick up money that night. After you do what you really, really, really want to do.
Okay. You knew you had something.
Yeah, I got $3, but I'm on my way to a weekend gig.
Got it.
Then I'm going to pick up $300. I'm still not going to be old Jed's a millionaire. Don't get me wrong.
But you have
something. And by the time I get paid, I'm going to take 130 in drawers for a bag of weed and a little bit of taste.
I was going to say, because usually you get paid at the end, so you'd go up to them and be like, listen, I don't have any.
Oh, no, you just tell them the truth. You know what? On the way up here, my standard line was I lost my ATM card.
Okay.
Everywhere I went, you're not going to believe this. I lost my ATM card. Everywhere I went. As soon as I got to the club, if they said go to the hotel, I go to the hotel. That's where the war would start. Do you have a credit card? No, I don't. I lost it on the plane. So how are we going to check it? I don't know. Let's call the club. And I would have to call the club. The club owner would have to come. And we'll give him the credit card number over the phone. And then he would call me and I'd tell him the story. I don't have a credit card. I haven't eaten since 8 in the morning. He'd go, okay, get dinner at the hotel and put it on my tab. It'd be the worst dinner in the world. But what did I care? It would be, and I'm lying to you, it wouldn't be those type of hotels. They would be like Motel 6s
right,
with potato chips in the hallway. And then down the corner, it'd be like really bad hamburger spot, you know, like stuff like that. And I would have to, he would come and bring me cash and drop me off, and I would have to walk back like a half a mile to my room and then wait. And it was just a abuse cycle. It was just a cycle of abuse, but I was working. And that's all that mattered, that I was working every weekend. I was picking up Tuesdays, picking up Thursdays.
Is that, I mean, is that part of it? Because like I was saying, when I went with Simone, I made, and the guy gave me a bonus, but because I drove, but I was supposed to make $375, I think, and it gave me $475, something like that, for like 4 days of work. But it really is so much fun. Like especially when you're on, like, you're there for the weekend, you do now, you hang out with your buddies, you're working a couple hours a night making people laugh. Like, is that why you go through so much shit? Because it's not like you're at a job, like, oh, I'm at the cubicle. It's like,
listen, fuck, man, this one day it comes to you that society doesn't work for you. Society doesn't fit for you. Bob Lalingas sits at a desk all day. Bob Lalingas is a sweetheart. I know he makes good money as an accountant.
Yeah.
But ask Bob if he'd like to get out of that job, you know, and then have fun and goof around. But everybody has their priorities. Everybody has a family. You know, your father pushes you into a direction. You know, your father's like, I want you to be a lawyer like me. And then you realize you're miserable. One day when you first discover comedy, all right, you discover it, okay? You watch it, but then you get involved with it. But then you take it that extra level. Like, I was involved with it for 2 years, and it was fun. Like, you know, my eyes were wide open. I didn't say much. And by the three-year mark, I started understanding what was going on around me. I was getting used to the rejection, you know, the lies, people, I'm going to book you, call that number, and then they never call the number. You know, you start realizing that comedy's a lot like life. There's no big differences. There's people who are pieces of garbage, and there's people who are great people who will open their hearts and their hands to you and you know, give you whatever the hell you need while you're there. It's really weird, you know. And I've said it before, that commitment and confidence in the universe, as long as you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, you'll see it. I see it. I still see it. I still see it in little bits and pieces. As long as you know you're doing the job. You know, last night I was home. It was Monday night. So whatever it was. Yeah, Monday night. And my wife wasn't feeling well. She went to bed at 8 o'clock. I had an option. I could sit there and watch TV. I know you called about 11, but I was knee deep in Vietnam stuff. I was getting plane tickets. I was sending itineraries.
I wasn't sure what that meant.
I was sending emails. I was, you know, it's just so weird that the work ethic, I'm very proud of my work ethic. It's a shame my mother died, and it's a shame that it's been 40 years, and I miss her, and her anniversary was the 8th. But I was soft. I was very, very soft. And the events that happened made me step up. Like, made me step up. It made me do things that I never thought I would do and I never thought I'd want to do. Back to your question. You know, the third and fourth year of comedy, it really is a party. It really is fun. Once you've established that, A, this is what you're going to do, B, you got yourself a little telemarketing job in the daytime, just covering your bills, G. Just covering your bills. You know why? Because that's all you want to do. That's, you got 5 hours a day for something else. Those other 19 hours, you're dedicating to comedy. You eat, sleep, and dream comedy. Before you go to bed, you're circling clubs you want to play. You're writing your goals. You know, when you want to, like I still remember the confusion I lived in when I was in Boulder in 95, from January of 95 to June of 95, when I knew I was fighting an uphill battle. I knew I was fighting an uphill battle, but then number two, I realized that I was going to lose the battle. At one point, you do realize you lose the battle. And I lost the battle, and I made a decision. I tried to do the best I can. And listen, you know what? By trying to do the best I can, I made out on top on that deal. I lost a daughter, but I made it on top on that deal. Okay, let's. Once the fourth and third year of comedy come, You're getting rejected, but it's falling off your shoulders. Because you've been getting rejected now for 2 or 3 years. Now you know how it feels. The thing is, you're going out, you're picking up $25, and you're getting two drink tickets. And you're going to give the bartender a 10 and drink for free the rest of the night. And you got your three buddies and your two little comedy girlfriends, that, and they're married, but they're out. You know, this is, and in a year, you'll see him. We got separated. He didn't like me hanging out at night, but guess what? People will get divorced for comedy.
Yeah.
They will get divorced for comedy. Once you get that bug, you'll lose people along the way constantly because they can't handle what you do or how you do it. Your lifestyle becomes different. You ever see Major League?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll never forget this. One of the opening scenes of Major League is when they're calling around looking for players.
Right.
And they call Tom Berenger. And he drops down, he picks up the phone, and he's like, hold on, there's two naked chicks next to him. I saw that movie before I started doing triple runs. And in my head, I equated that to a triple run. Like that's what I'm going to be doing. That's not what I was doing. There was not one night that I picked up two girls to go back to a room. But I equated that because I had done my research. I had spoken to other comics. And the comics I had spoken to, you know, Rogan made a point one day to me. He was like, you know, how many doctors and lawyers are there? And how many comedians are there? You know, you have to think about how crazy you have to be to get into comedy. How crazy you have to be. I would love for them to publish, like, charts, but they can't do it. It's like the census. Like, like when they go looking for homeless people and they take to see how many people live in the bushes and stuff to get the exact population. You'll never get the exact population of comics because comedy is a lot like jiu-jitsu. You get people who do it for 3 months. You get people who do it for 9 months. You get people who do it for a year. If you're in it for a year, you're going to stay in it for 5 or 6 years. 5 or 6 years when you go, I met a girl. I never really liked the road anyway. I met 1,000 comics who looked at me and said, I loved comedy until I had to take a plane and a drive.
See, that seems like the most fun part.
That's the most fun part. So that's, you know what I'm saying? Like that's the traveling.
That's what I'm working towards.
That's what you're working towards. So there's a lot of people who have come to me and said, this is not, I'm going to do it, but I'm not going to go on the road. I'm going to do it locally, get a day job, get married, and have kids and have a family. That's the beauty about doing comedy. You can pick to choose the way of comedy you want to do.
Yeah, it could be a hobby or it could be a career. Man,
there's some people who, this is not, you know, and again, I've said it again, this was not my original plan. And my original plan was not ever even to come to LA because I thought I wouldn't be good enough. You know, me having felonies and all the other things, it just wouldn't be good enough. But anyway, I just wanted to reiterate to you people that finally, after years, I've convinced myself, thanks to you people and thanks to the feedback and the emails and whatnot, I really did go through a minefield to become a comic. It really, really, really was a minefield, you know? And like I told Dean the other night, I go, Dean, honestly, there was nights when I talked to you at like 7 o'clock and you tell me that you headed to the East Side Comedy Club, then you headed to two spots at the Cellar, and hopefully by that time you'll find out if you got a hotel room. And I would go out and go, well, why don't I just send them money? What am I doing? You know, I'm a good guy. And I would go, no, this is part of the plan. This is part of the fun. This is whole, you know, what happens if you do go to the Comedy Cellar and you meet a girl and she's like, come back to my place. You know, you could stay there for a week. You know, that's the adventure that you're looking to get. But if you don't go out there and look for it, it's never going to come to you. It's not, the bluebird of happiness does not knock on your door. You right. know, it's so weird how I had a couple of weird things happened the last 2 days. Monday was my 10-year anniversary with my wife.
Right.
And today was my last doctor's appointment with this doctor after 21 years.
Which one?
Dr. Waxler, my favorite.
Oh, he's retiring or something?
My family doctor of 21 years, the guy that reintroduced me to the needle. because I would not take a needle. He convinced me to draw blood. He convinced me to do physicals. He put the finger up my ass.
I'm surprised you're not making him not retire just for you. Like, listen, you can retire, but
he
every
did
6 months.
He did his job. He was a very, very, very good doctor to me, and I want to applaud him. He told me to stay friends with him on Facebook. I gave him a hug. I brought him a gift, you know. He reminded me of the time I gave him a cookie and forgot to mention that it was a THC cookie.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. And he put it in his freezer, and then he ate it like a day later. And he started getting all these emotions of love and all this stuff. And it was just really interesting to go down there and give him a hug. And, you know, he left a note for my next doctor. Don't bother him with needles. He's not going to do it. I've been trying to talk to him about a tetanus shot for 4 years. He won't do it.
I'd love to get him on the podcast.
Only get him to give blood in the mornings.
He needs a window in there.
I gave blood this afternoon. You know, I did a podcast with Mercy. My daughter's in the studio today. She's got earphones on. She's got earphones on. I did a podcast with her today about science. And I'm sitting there. We do one every Tuesday.
I just want to hear you say it.
Yeah, we do one every Tuesday. It's called Science with Mercy. And, you know, this morning while I was taping her podcast, I was actually preparing to give blood. And she stopped her podcast to ask me, Daddy, what are you doing? And I'm like, I got to go for a physical. And I got to give, I know I'm going to have to give him blood, so I might as well practice.
What do you mean practice?
I put my arm out and I make believe I'm getting raped. I try to think of just getting raped. Somebody climbing on top of me and raping me, and I can't push with my other hand. Because when I give blood, that's exactly what I feel like. I have to let myself feel restless. If not, I won't give the blood. But I have to put my arm out and go, take me, I'm yours. You know what I'm saying? If not, it's not going
to
work.
I'd love to just live an hour in your brain and just...
You have no idea what I've gone through.
Giving blood?
Listen, my fear of needles ran rampant. Rampant for years. It really, really
me
did.
Me too.
It was, no, I beat you out because you go. I mean, I was a guy that didn't refuse to go to a doctor from the age of 19 to, Jesus, Lee. I didn't go to a doctor for at least 10 years.
Jesus.
Didn't go to a dentist for 15 years because I was scared of needles. You know, if anybody said anything about a needle, I just instantly froze up. I met Waxler. It took me a little time. I started giving him one blood thing a year and I would faint. Then they figured out. They put me in a room with windows. They put ice on my head and tip it over. And they said, bring music. And, bro, I worked myself up from going in there. I would have to bring a sandwich and a can of soda.
What?
Oh, guys, come on. You know I'm scared of all that stuff. I was the biggest fag in the world. I would go there with a ham and Swiss sandwich. I would take a can of Coca-Cola with me to replenish the sugar. Right. God forbid I had any sugar in me. And I'd bring him like a donut. And after they took blood, that was my present. And then I drive in the car and go to Lulu's and have breakfast.
After the sandwich and the donut?
Oh, yeah. You know me, 400 pounds. I think you get there because you only eat one meal. So this is how crazy, you know, because when you go give blood, you can't eat before you go give blood.
Right.
Are you crazy? That kills me. I can't leave the house without eating. I get dizzy when I'm driving. I would have to drive, have my wife drive me down there. I'd be crying the whole way, turn around. You have no idea what I suffered those first 5 years. I'll never forget with the sleep apnea. Like, I had to call him and get his word that it had nothing to do with a needle, sleep apnea. And he's like, don't worry about it. You're not going to get no needles. So I went down there.
And I did this stuff when I was like six.
Yeah, no, you were six. I
That's
was a grown
saying.
Adult.
That's so funny.
I was a 30-year-old adult, close to hitting 40. I was when I first.
Listen, no needles.
When you figure when I first went into Waxler, I had to be 30-something years old.
Oh my god!
First time I went to Waxler, I didn't even know I had Waxler available to me. I went to the emergency room for my tooth because I had that. You know, I used to take my teeth out with Jack Daniels and a wrench. So I pulled all my molars out, but one molar broke, and it stayed in here, and I had an abscess, and it would swell up, and I would push it, and pus would come out. And if I was at the comedy store around people I didn't like, I would push the back of my tooth and the pus would shoot out and hit them on their neck or on their jacket. God, Joey. Only Josh Wolf and Joe Rogan knew, and they loved when I did it to people. Joe Rogan would always go, please go get that tooth fixed. It's creeping me out. And I go, no, I love it. It's my pus shooter. I used to just shoot pus at people with this tooth. It was like a little fang hanging out of there. I finally, Steve Simone's brother's a dentist.
Yeah.
He took it out and put fake teeth there. And
oh, my God. That's so funny that you went to Steve Simone's brother.
Steve Simone's brother was my dog. I'd go in there with a phony insurance claim. He'd type up whatever. They had a bunch of Filipinos. Yeah, allegedly. They had a bunch of Filipinos that'd be trying to sell me on stuff, and he'd be in the back. Don't do it.
Oh, my God. Don't
do it. Yes, he's... Steve Simone's brother was my dentist for years.
I didn't know that.
Down in Santa Monica. They had left me, and I was pissed at Steve for like a year because he left me, and I had $1,500 left on my tooth plan on the insurance. I was going to go down there, but when I went down there, he wasn't there no more, so I lost the $1,500 on my fucking teeth. I was pissed at Steve for like 6 months. I go, Steve, where's your fucking brother? He goes, I'm dying. He moved back to Philadelphia. I go, no, nobody told me. What type of dentist is he? He doesn't even send you a postcard. To let you know he's retiring.
I'm surprised you didn't go to Philly and get him to
fix. Oh, I was furious at him. I just recently started talking to Steve about his brother. How the dentist is doing. Because this tooth has worked. It stayed there solid. It's been that piece. It's been there solid. Oh, it's got a lifetime guarantee. That's but anyway, so you people don't care about lifetime guarantees. As far as the anniversary was concerned, Monday, I knew that it was our anniversary. It was our 10-year anniversary. And I went somewhere in the morning, and when I got home, my phone started ringing. People were like, hey, happy anniversary, happy anniversary. And then I went on Facebook, and my wife had posted a picture with a thing, you know, I married this guy 10 years ago, you know. And I started crying. Like, not that I have forgotten that it was our anniversary, I just started crying because I accomplished something. Like, even today with Dr. Waxler, if you knew anything about me, I was the type of guy I would quit a doctor. You know, I would quit things like nothing. I hung out with Dr. Waxler for 21 years, and I've been approached by 1,000 doctors. Hey, come over here, come on. Waxler was just my dog. He's a Chicago dog. Every time he goes to Chicago, he brings back meat and the buns, and he freezes them. And he says that he wakes up in the middle of the night some nights and puts them and cooks them. And
nice.
He steams the bread. He would tell me how he'd steam the bread perfectly with a paper towel and stuff. He's just a great doctor and a great guy. So I just wanted to thank him. But what a lot of people don't know is, you know, like I was telling you yesterday, when I was a kid, there was a barbecue joint on 148th Street. And they had a guy. We went in there and bought barbecue beef. I don't know anything about brisket. I didn't know anything about ribs then or nothing. I knew about Chinese ribs, you know. My mom always got spare ribs, but I didn't know what barbecue really was. I must have been 5 or 6, and I would go in there every day, and whenever I went to my godmother's house on 148, this barbecue joint was just a small little place, and their specialty was barbecue beef sandwiches and 2 pieces of Wonder Bread, and it was just deliciously, you know, with an inch of meat in between, and God knows what I was eating, cat fingernails, who knew? You know, it was the 70s. It wasn't the health department. They just gave you the best of what they got, you know. But the guy was an African-American guy, and I took a liking to him. In fact, he used to let us help him work, you know, which was nice. He would, like I told you yesterday, those street, when you're in New York and you see those things that go down underneath the business, he would let him, he would let us carry stuff and trade for them for food and stuff. But he used to always say an expression, and I never knew what he was saying. It was called, till the wheels fall off. Like, I'll be here till the wheels fall off. I'll see you tomorrow, Mr. Smith. And I don't know if that was his name or not. He'd go, I'll be here till the wheels fall off. And one day I asked him, you know, like, what does that mean? He's like, when the wheels fall off, is that it means you're all in, baby. You know, you're all in. You're all in. And he goes, you see the way you guys hang out together? You guys are going to hang out until the wheels fall off. So it became like a state of mind for me. Till the wheels fall off means that I got you. I got you, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is it. We're friends for life. I got you. 20 Puerto Ricans show up. I got to fight them with you back to back. And you have to do the same for me. Don't think that this is a one-way fucking street. And sometimes it is. And then you stop, you know, living with those people like that. But it's really weird that that's what's engraved inside our wedding bands. Till the wheels fall off, till, you know, in good or in health, whatever that, you know, till the wheels fall off is something that we live by. And it's so weird that it's already Thanksgiving, guys. Listen, it's already Thanksgiving. And something else is happening. The year is coming to an end. It's officially over. Like, if you think that something, yeah, you might hit the lottery. That's the only thing that could happen. You might hit the lottery, maybe, if all the angels align. But besides that, you know, you might pluck a job. But right now, everything dies. People, after December 7th, the 8th, everybody's talking about jingle bells and jingle balls and Christmases and where they're going. I'm already thinking about 2020. I'm already thinking about goals. I'm already thinking about what I want to do with my life, what things I have to perk up. I really got to get this book, you know, as much as I write, I got to get this book off the shelf. If not, it's going to be, you know, I have to do so many things. Today, Lee and I talked about the podcast, about maybe taking music off so we could put it on Spotify. You know, it's November, and I'm already looking at 2020, and I advise you to do the same. Listen, this year is over with. Whatever happened, happened. Whether it was a good year or a bad year, you lived through it. You made it. You're here. Now you have to see how we're going to get better for 2020. You know, I'm going to get better in 2020. Lee's going to be a little bit better than what he is now in 2020. My daughter's going to be a little bit better than what she is. And I'm counting on the church family to all strive to be better in 2020. And, well, Joe, it's easy for you to say no. It's easy. I don't want you to go from hero to zero or zero to hero. I just want you to take two baby steps. It's 1 foot at a time to get to your goal. Whatever your goal might be, you want to be a DJ. You want to be a fighter. You want to switch your career, you know. We talk a lot about switching careers here. It's not called switching careers. It's going for what you love. It'll make your life a lot easier. Going for what you love makes your life a lot easier. You know, we all, 60% of people who have a job, we don't like what the fuck we're doing. It's very seldom that people really enjoy their job and they don't look at what they're making a year. Like, I don't even care what I'm making a year. I really enjoy what the hell I'm doing. If I was looking for real money, I would have just joined Narcos. If you're looking for that type of money, just go to Mexico. Go hang out with those Mormons and bring back coke. I don't know what to tell you. That's real money. What you're looking for is just to be content, be proud of what you're doing, you know. I'll tell you, man, for years I lived in disgust of myself. Frustration, disgust. Wasn't until I had Mercy that I started seeing the light, because now I had to act a certain way, you know? And this July, I'll be with my wife for 20 years. We celebrated a 10-year wedding anniversary Monday. And I got to tell you something, man. I never thought I could accomplish that. After I failed as a husband the first time, marriage was the last thing on my mind. And for me to be married for 10 years... You know, and I'd like to tell you guys that I found the right woman. That's an excuse we all give ourselves. Ah, we found the right woman. No. We decided to fight for what we believe for. The first woman I was married for was a very sweet girl, but she went through 4, 5, 6 years of hell with me, you know. And you know what? When I was with her, even towards the end, there was no future. This is how much of a change I've made. There was no future. I had no future. I was just going to be a working stiff, and God knows what I was going to do. Every 3 months, I was going to change because I wasn't content with what I was doing. Forget all that. Listen, man, I got into comedy, and it's till the wheels fall off. And that's it. That's all I got to tell you guys. This is going to be a short Thanksgiving podcast. Mercy Diaz, can I talk to you on? Do you want to sit with us for 5 minutes?
I'm good.
You don't want to say hello to the people?
I'm good.
And tell them about your science with Mercy? Okay, she's good, ladies and gentlemen. There you have it. There you have it. She didn't want to tell them, but at least I brought her. I brought her to the office. She wanted to see what I did. She does her own podcast, so I told her that this is what we need to do, and this is how we do it. She's been doing, she's up to podcast number 8 already.
Good for her.
And she's only taking the week of the 30th off like we are. She tried to take her birthday week off. Ask her. She's like, I don't want to do it the week before my birthday. We do it every week. This is called consistency. There's no days off. You want something to happen, you got to be consistent. That's plain and simple. You want something to happen, you got to be consistent every day. Look at this guy, Kung Pong Boom. He wants a war. He keeps sending out missiles. Trump's over there scratching his wig, going, oh, no, we're at peace. We're friends. This guy's still shooting off fireworks like it's the 4th of July over there, King Young Moon. You know, whatever his goddamn name
That's
is.
That's all right. I don't want to start a war.
I'm not good with politics. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm not good with that stuff.
Imagine if you were president just tweeting out this stuff. You'd tweet, they'd be begging for Trump to be back.
Oh, please. Forget about it. I'm a savage. I give it to you how it is. But anyway, I want you to, if you're traveling, be safe this weekend. Remember, Thanksgiving, this is a Hallmark card tomorrow. Thanksgiving is tomorrow. Please enjoy your families and all that stuff. But one thing, Thanksgiving is every day. Because when you're pissing in the morning, when you wake up, if you're not saying, God, thank you for giving me another day today to get ahead a little bit, you're fucking missing the boat. I'm one of the most grateful people there is. I'm grateful for my shoelaces. I'm grateful for the weed I smoke. I'm grateful for everything because I knew there was a time when I was homeless as hell and I had nothing. 5 years without a residence. Like, I wanted people to
know
that.
I don't think I could do it.
And then before that, like, I had time. You know, in 84, I was homeless and stuff like that. But that was because of drugs, because that was a nuisance to society. This was, I was in love with something. And I still ended up homeless. You know what I'm saying? And I was three quarters together. I was doing a couple criminal things. But the homelessness was due to me wanting to do comedy. What it meant to me. And, yeah, there's highs and lows in anything you do in this life, man. But, hey, who gives a shit? It's Thanksgiving, man. Enjoy your families. Real quick, I'm in Miami this weekend. It's sold out. I don't know what to tell you. I can't help you out. I put the tickets up for sale a while ago. I'm sorry. I will come back to Miami in 2020. Whatever. We'll figure out a bigger venue or whatever. New York, there's singular tickets left, and they raised all the prices on them. So do not feel bad. I'm done. You know, I don't want you to pay over $35. So move on. We got the 21st, Christmas with Uncle Joey at the Ice House. And then we got the 27th at Calusa Casino and the 28th in San Francisco Palace of Performing Arts.
And you got the belly room, too.
And we got the belly room sold out.
Oh, sold out already? Sold out already. Damn. Yeah. All right, never mind.
That's the workout for the one-man show. Listen, this podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. Manscaped, over the years, I've had 1,000 sponsors. I really enjoy Manscaped. I really enjoy what Manscaped does. I like the bag. I like all the everything they got. They used to have a Manscaped lawnmower called the 1.0, and they upgraded their trimmer with a skin-safe technology for you momos in the back. That means it won't nick or snag your nutsack. Plus, it's perfect to travel for. I take it with me, and it's easy to charge. You put it right against the wall. You can manscape wherever you go. I do it one-handed while I'm on the phone with Lee talking about life. Manscaped will have her landing on your little Plymouth cock. I mean, rock. Anyway, if this is the first time you've considered manscaping, they got the deal for you. I got the deal for you. You ready? Grab a pen. It's called the perfect package because it comes with a lawnmower 2.0 and a safety razor plus. Plus, it comes with a thing called the crop preserver, especially formulated deodorant so your balls don't stink. And trust me, they smell worse than the Mayflower. And the reviver. It's a spritz that tones and refreshes your junk to keep it old. If I show you my balls right now, they look like they're 90. If I spray them with the spritz 10 minutes later, it's like putting eyeshadow on. It looks like I'm 22. It tightens your stuff up. And with the perfect package, your pouch will be powdered and your pole will be perfect. What are you waiting for? Grab a pen. Go to manscaped.com, press in code CHURCH. And if you order the perfect package, they're going to throw in a free travel bag for you that you're going to love. They got a zipper in it. You could put reefer in there. Who's better than you? You know what I'm saying? You didn't hear this from Uncle Joey. Crank call. Anyway, go to manscaped.com right now. Use promo code CHURCH and get 20% off your first order. And if you order the perfect package, they'll throw in the free travel bag gratis. Just use promo code CHURCH. That's Manscaped. Also, the church is brought to you by one of my personal favorites. We've been with them for years. You know, some people say, hey, is there a warranty on this product? Listen. A bidet, a portable bidet that you can install yourself in less than 10 seconds and change your whole life. Joey, how's a bidet going to change my whole life? You ever have a Chinese girl spit in your asshole? It's tremendous. Now, eliminate the Chinese girl because it costs too much money. Just think
of having, a lot of upkeep.
Just think of having somebody just spit in your asshole for an hour like that. That's what a bidet does. It's beautiful. They start at $79. Tushy sprays your ass with fresh water, not toilet water. Tushy connects to the water supply behind your toilet to spray your little dirty parts clean with fresh water, the same water you brush your teeth with. Wet wipes are worse than toilet paper. They're terrible for the environment. They cause anal fissures, and you don't want no anal fissures. Listen, Tushy started at $79. I got different colors, different styles. Tushy's latest product, the Tushy Edelman, helps you get everything out. Now, you're saying to me, Joey, why do I want to use Tushy? You know why? Because it sprays directly nice, clean water into your ass and removes the poop completely. So you aren't sitting on bacteria that leads to hemorrhoids, yeast infection, UTI, and the worst thing ever, itchy asshole. You ever have an itchy asshole in the middle of the day and you got to figure out how to scratch your asshole? And then you're scared that if you scratch, it smells too bad and you're left over. Like, you ever have that tequila ass and you're sitting there, your ass is on fire for no reason? And it's because you got a little aftergrowth. Like, you left a little bit of around the rim, now your ass is on fire.
Yeah.
You don't need, that's not going to happen with Tushy because it gets deep in there and you won't have that. Your ass will feel refreshed. It's like putting Listerine in your mouth in the morning. You kill all the germs and the Malukia germs. Do me a favor. Go to HelloTushy.com right now. Take a look at the best portable bidet in the business. Pick one. I'm going to give you 10% off your order when you press in church on the way out, all right? I love Tushy. I've been using it for 3 years. They have a 60-day guarantee, but Lee's got one and I got one. And if our fat asses haven't broken it, your little skinny bony ass won't do no damage to it either. That's it and that's that. Listen, I want to thank Tello Tushy. I want to thank Manscaped. But most importantly, I want to wish you and all your families a happy Thanksgiving. You guys are great. Thank you for the support, the love. And we'll be back Tuesday, Tip Top Magoo, the 2nd of December, ready to rock. Crack that motherfucking Mule Lee.